They've cleaned up the streets.
They cleaned up the streets.
Well, after the big, you know, alien invasion came through the friggin' hole in the sky, I mean, somebody had to clean it up. The Black Market Toast Podcast, where we take a piece of media out of the cupboard, dust it off, toast it up, and serve it as something new. This is episode number 83, and we are jumping off of Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah. Okay. So, it was done by Wes Craven.
Okay.
Who you think, okay,
yeah,
you know, Freddy Krueger, and he's a horror movie guy.
Right.
And, you know, it's written by Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's a funny guy.
Right.
He's... So you're thinking, wow, this could really be awesome.
And
it's got Angela Bassett as one of the main characters.
I remember enjoying it at the time. I believe I own it on VHS somewhere in storage. But in retrospect...
Boy, this movie does. It's terrible.
It's very similar to a Leprechaun movie.
Yeah.
In retrospect.
It really is.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... not even Angela Bassett, who I love as an actress, who I think is just supremely talented, could save this movie.
Not even Dwayne Wayne from A Different World could save this film.
No. And I mean, and that's the thing. Does anybody run hotter and colder as a movie actor than Eddie Murphy? I don't know if it's the movies he picks or whatever, but to me, nobody runs hotter and colder.
Right.
He's either absolutely hilarious, or the movies are terrible.
Well, I was gonna say that it seems like any movie where he feels the need to play multiple parts.
That's true. Is this the first movie where Eddie Murphy played multiple parts?
Didn't he in... wasn't he multiple parts in Harlem Nights, though?
You're right.
Yeah.
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 He was.
So that one was good.
Yeah.
But
one of the funniest movies ever.
But, you know, he had Arsenio Hall with him. And that... And it's almost like when he tries to do the dramedy instead of the comedy.
Right.
But
no, he's done some straight-up comedies that have been just garbage.
Yeah, well, but that's after. he has definitely peaked, by this point. But, you know, then he had a little bit of a resurgence with, like, what, Bowfinger and
Dr. Doolittle.
Dr. Doolittle and some other things.
I'm trying to think of what else he did that was
sign of things to come.
Well, he's Shrek. I mean, all of
he's Donkey.
Voice
he's acting Donkey.
To Shrek is great.
He was the dragon in Mulan. You know?
Yeah.
So his voiceover stuff for kids movies is okay. But basically he is in that transitional phase here where he's trying to not just be the dirty-mouthed comedian.
Well, see, and that's what's funny. I mean, like, I'm having to peruse his filmography.
Uh-huh.
And when you look at things, like, just starting in 2001, he does Donkey and Shrek. Animated for all of these BAFTA awards and all these good things. The very next year, he does... The Adventures of Pluto Nash and I Spy, where he's nominated for a Golden Raspberry for the worst actor.
Yes.
And the worst on-screen couple.
Yes.
And then you go down, like, to 2005, he does Dreamgirls, where he's fucking fantastic, he's nominated for an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor, and then the very next year he does Norbit, Golden Raspberry Award winner for Worst Actor.
So he just needs to be more selective with his roles, but
I guess
he should not be the one that makes that decision.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
I really don't know. I mean...
But, you know, compared to the Adam Sandler path, he's doing well.
He is. No, I mean...
There are still relevant things coming out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean,
just
and
not everything.
It's
like, you know, it's like the Nicolas Cage career, you know?
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You still go see the Nicolas Cage train wrecks because it's a train wreck.
What's amazing, and I did not realize this, Vampire in Brooklyn is the last movie Eddie Murphy did before he did The Nutty Professor.
Okay, yeah.
Which, I mean, is that was kind of, hey, Eddie Murphy's back and he's hilarious again.
Yeah, yeah. But it's a kid's movie.
It is a kid's movie.
Yeah. Whereas, you know, 48 Hours and Beverly Hills Cop, he was the gritty cursing comedian still. Right. He was still in that stand-up phase.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. And I mean, and I think I don't think he's done an R-rated movie since Life. I think Life, which is one of my favorite movies.
Mm-hmm.
Hilarious. I think it was the last R-rated movie Eddie Murphy's done.
Yeah.
If he's done one, I can't remember it.
Yeah. Well, and I guess he doesn't want his kids to remember him as the bad mouth comedian guy.
I don't know. No, they need to watch Eddie Murphy Raw.
Yeah, I think, yeah.
Or Delirious and understand exactly how funny this dude was. As a stand-up man, when he got on a roll, he was unbeatable.
I understand being a family guy, but at the same time, if you're not letting your kids know who you actually are, you're doing a disservice. Because, you know, at that point, you're teaching them to kind of suppress their reality or let their dreams go. And that's just not something I want to teach my kids, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, it's, for me, I guess he didn't want to be typecast, and I understand that completely.
Yeah.
It's for, and I mean, it's funny because Ice Cube has done the same thing to a large extent.
Yeah.
You know, is to kind of defang yourself in order to get, you know, parts and roles that are going to make a lot of money and are going to make you, you know, kind of more beloved than this edgy, raw, you know, scary black guy.
Yeah.
Which,
yeah.
I mean, as bad as it is, there's a large segment of the population that, you know, oh, that's, you know, that's bad. And that's scary.
Yeah.
You know, so I understand it. And I'm sure he's made if you just look at the movies he's made since even Life.
Yeah.
He's made a ton of movies. Now he's in Disney movies.
Mm-hmm.
Now he's, you know, you can go to Disney World and hear his voice.
Right.
It's much more financially lucrative.
Well, yeah. But as far as legacy goes, it's not as good.
right. And I mean, I would love for Eddie Murphy to come out at some point and do like a Netflix stand-up special he's just Eddie Murphy again.
Yeah,
and he goes out and just starts obliterating people.
And I'm not sure he is Eddie Murphy, you know?
He may not be.
I'm not sure he is. I'm not sure he's coming from a place that is close enough to that early 80s Eddie Murphy.
No, it's true.
It might be, if he tried it, that it would come out as forced and contrived.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, because, I mean, it wasn't like he was like Dave Chappelle, who just dropped off the face of the earth for a while.
Right.
And then came back and was like,
willing to let it go.
I'm Dave Chappelle, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
You know.
Dave Chappelle is willing to let stuff go in service of the comedy.
Yeah. Yeah, which is, I mean, to me, why he's on that next level of comedians.
Right.
You know, because he really likes the art, and he really likes the craft, and he sacrificed for it.
Right.
But yeah, it's, I don't know.
I mean, not that Dave Chappelle is hard off at all.
Oh, God, no.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I mean, it takes, there's a certain amount of, you know, you have to be at a certain level just to be able to drop off face of the earth 5 years. And it's funny because Eddie Murphy, well, Charlie Murphy, and then by proxy, Eddie Murphy and Dave Chappelle are so intertwined because of Chappelle's Show.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, Charlie Murphy, I guess, was one of the producers of this movie. He wrote the screenplay.
Okay.
Which is not a good thing.
which is not a positive credit, but it is a credit.
It's really not. But, I mean,
he completed 100 pages of writing.
Right, yeah. You wrote a thing. Congratulations, Charlie Murphy.
This exists.
Yes.
That is end of credit.
Pretty much. I guess this was after playing basketball with Prince. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, I don't know.
Where this all fit in. I'm assuming it was after they hung out with Rick James, maybe before basketball with Prince.
Who knows?
But yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, there is such a link between them because of that show.
Yeah, and at the same time, this was, you know, it's not a good movie, but it's a African-American movie made by African-Americans for an African-American audience for the most part.
It is.
And that was important in the late 90s.
Oh, yeah. And it's still important.
Somewhat groundbreaking in that scene, you know?
Right. And I mean, I don't know. It was a movie that...
And it almost jumps back on some black exploitation tropes that just should have not.
And see, that was it. It was black exploitation enough to where it didn't get over.
Uh huh.
But there wasn't enough black exploitation to make it a black exploitation film, right. Which then you know it's all tongue in cheek, yeah. You know, ha ha ha.
It went halfway. It keeps itself too serious. It keeps itself serious enough to try to be taken as a regular movie, but not. But
the content is not serious enough to be taken serious,
right? But it is not. It is not goofy enough to fall back into the cult status.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it tries too hard to be a cult movie. Well, I mean, not that The Room didn't try. Right. But, yeah. But maybe it did.
Maybe it didn't. Know. I mean, who knows? That's not a mind I want to delve too deep into. But, but that was one of those things. It took itself too seriously.
Right.
About, like, not serious content.
Yes,
like,
yes.
You should read A Vampire in Brooklyn and go, oh, this is going to be a laugh.
Yes, yes.
You know, I'm going to really enjoy this movie. It's going to be, you know, goofy and offbeat. Yeah.
And the screenplay says Leprechaun. The dialogue says Leprechaun.
Oh, yeah.
And they decided to go entirely too serious for Leprechaun.
Right, yeah. You brought in Wes Craven to do it, who I guess was trying to make a horror movie.
Well, and I mean, Wes Craven, his big hit was Nightmare on Elm Street, which was a horror movie with a comedic lead.
Right.
So, you know, Wes Craven was just trying to do what Wes Craven does and polishing this turd.
Yeah.
But he inevitably went too serious with it, which is what Wes Craven does. It was almost, you know, we went for the high name director and they shouldn't have.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so, because then, okay, well, now we have to make a serious movie. We have Wes Craven here.
Yes.
Whereas if you realize a quarter of the way through shooting with a lesser director that this is going to be kind of a goofball thing, you can adjust the script
lean into
and make
it.
Yeah, you can lean into it.
Yeah.
And then you probably are either a black exploitation film or a cult film because you've realized how silly this is.
Right.
You know. So it really was.
Just lean into it and go, okay, yeah, this is I'm gonna get you sucker with vampires.
Right. Yeah, right. Yeah. Which is really what it should have been.
which was a modern movie. You know, they cohabitate the same general
timeline, yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, I mean, lean into it. If you're going Vampire in Brooklyn, Vampire in Brooklyn.
Right, yeah.
And we're not talking about current freaking hipster Brooklyn. We're talking about...
This is old school, like...
This
is back when Brooklyn was dangerous as fuck.
Yeah, this is back when the entire world thought that Brooklyn was this dangerous, dangerous place.
Right.
Yeah, and not basically an entire city.
Yeah.
They thought it was, you know, five neighborhoods of... Just
shooty stabby death.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a...
Because most people outside of New York do not realize that each of the five boroughs is basically a city unto itself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have a friend that lives in Brooklyn right now. She never leaves because she doesn't need to.
Right.
You know, she's like, everything I need's in Brooklyn. I never have to. Why the hell would I go on and go to Manhattan? Manhattan's terrible. I'm just going to hang out here. If I'm feeling adventurous, I slide over to Queens and do stuff.
Brooklyn's terrible, too.
Brooklyn is all fucking hipster now. Though.
Yeah.
She's like, if I'm feeling adventurous, I'll go to Queens, you know?
If I'm feeling adventurous, I'll leave the city and go somewhere affordable.
She worked for some tech startup. I'm sure she makes good money.
Yeah. Until it collapses.
Hey, whatever. No, until they get bought out by Microsoft.
Oh,
and then you
cash in your stock. Yes.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's how it works. But, that would be, you know. And New York City as a whole has changed dramatically in the last, 30, 40 years.
Right, because of the Defenders.
Well, yeah. Of course. I mean,
they've cleaned up the streets.
They cleaned up the streets.
Well, after the big, you know, alien invasion came through the friggin' hole in the sky, I mean, somebody had to clean it up.
Well, of course.
And that man was Kingpin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's the real good guy here.
Yeah.
But it is funny that you go from like 80s and even into the 90s, like New York City was a dangerous place.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you didn't.
Well, Times Square was a shithole full of friggin'.
Right. Now that was in the 70s, and it really started then.
No, that was the 80s.
Well, yeah,
They didn't clean up Times Square until at least mid 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it was still friggin' pornographic theaters and sex shops.
Yeah, yeah, and now, I mean, here we are 30 years later. And it's, or 20 years later, and it's, you know.
Planet Hollywood.
It's Disney World. I mean, essentially, it's like big city Disney World. Yeah, there's, you know, oh, here's Legoland, and here's all these other fun, goofy things to do, you know. It's
take kids.
Yeah. Yeah, if you'd have told your kids, I'm taking my kids, or if you'd have told, like, people, hey, I'm taking my kids to Brooklyn this weekend. Why? Do you hate them? Do you want them to die?
I want them to see how the other, half lives. Yes.
Yes. Their fancy lattes and
well-groomed
beards and shit.
Yes, I want them to see how the well-acclimated people live.
Right. But it's but New York it's always kind of on the forefront. I mean, you see it everywhere. It's happened in Charleston. It's happening in Greenville now. Like, once you start, like, gentrifying an area, it just, it starts spreading out and taking control.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, but it's funny, because, I mean, from a, like, sociological standpoint, like, the white flight of the 60s, or the 50s and 60s, where, like, white people got out of the city because, ooh, scared black folks live there. And now, they've all just decided to come back and take the city back over again.
Can we kick them back out? Because it's better for the city.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's better for the residents.
Right.
Because, you know, when people are coming in and, oh, we're making the city better. We're putting up these better buildings. Well, you're kicking out people.
Who've lived there.
Who've lived there for 50 years.
Yeah.
Who are not landowners. So they're not making any proceeds off this. You're kicking them out. You're paying their landlord who has kept them in this
poverty area.
This hovel for 50 years and not done any upgrades on the fucking building. But, you know, they had affordable rent. They lived close enough to work where they didn't have to worry about transportation.
Yeah.
And that's what they could afford. And now you're kicking them out of what they can afford and saying, go somewhere else. You can't afford that.
Yeah.
And you have to figure out transportation.
Yeah.
And we don't have good enough public transportation
to
handle that.
No, not in this city at all.
So, yeah, I mean, we're making the city nicer and we're making it better while you're screwing over the people who actually live here.
Right, right. And I mean, like, for me personally, that's, you know, when we were looking at houses in Atlanta, it was like, oh, come get a house in this, like, developing neighborhood. I was like, dude, this neighborhood's been here since the
1800s. Yeah, yeah.
Like, what you mean is, like, this
we're tearing down this
becoming
neighborhood.
White neighborhood. Yeah. Yeah,
we're tearing down this neighborhood. Yes.
Right,
yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, I don't really want to participate in that. Yeah. That being said, the house is nice and it's pretty cheap.
Yeah, but I mean, what's your alternative? I mean,
right?
Yeah, I mean, right. Yeah,
yeah. It's I don't want to like participate in the problem,
but
I also have to put my adult hat on and go, well, if I buy this $200,000 house now. And in 10 years, it's worth $500,000.
I've made roughly $10 in profit because of inflation. Yay!
No, not really. I mean, but you look. I mean, had you bought a house in, like, Atlanta's old 4th Ward 20 years ago for, like, $100,000, you can't buy anything down there for damn less than $500,000-$600,000.
Right,
so.
Right.
You can make your money,
yeah,
and then by the time we get ready to retire,
if we can
get the fuck out of Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, if nothing else, your rent seems, your mortgage payment seems insanely cheap in a few years, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's it. When, you know, the big money moves in, you're like, well, okay, hey, look at me.
Yeah. And then you get to be that, you get to be that one guy on freaking Stone Avenue who keeps his freaking building. Well, he keeps his building there while everything else around you is torn down and built into these,
dude,
these
I would totally,
atrocities.
I would totally have a nail house. Like, I'm the one guy who didn't sell. No. Screw you. I'm going to have this nice little house between all these big-ass buildings.
Yes.
And you can kiss my ass.
Yes. And at some point, you'll strap all kinds of balloons to it and float down to the Amazon.
Sure.
Yeah.
With my talking dog.
Yes. Squirrel.
Hi there.
So we need to kill about 5 more minutes.
Okay, so And I think, well, I'm trying to think of the best way to go about that, because it's, I mean, this movie is so...
Yeah, I mean, there are no meat and potatoes to dig into.
There's really not. It's a really bad movie. And I mean, I feel bad for Angela. Well, I guess it all worked out for Angela Bass.
Yeah, she'll be, she's fine. She got her groove back.
What? Not even on top of that, she got back into the horror genre. She's fantastic in American Horror Story.
Yeah.
You know, I think she started at the Coven season and has been in pretty much every season since then. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, now she doesn't necessarily play a scary character in this, you know, movie, but man, like, she's awesome in this film.
Yes.
Or in those TV shows. Yeah, in those shows. She's completely good, but it's...
Well, and you know, I came at Vampire in Brooklyn, and this was the height of my Vampire the Masquerade phase, so I come in and go, okay, well, he's showing these disciplines, so he is obviously of this clan, or blah, blah, you know, and, you know, you break it down that way.
You're getting way too deep into Vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah, like, okay, well, he has Lure of Flames, so, you know, he's possibly a Tremere, and it's like, yeah, okay. So... And that's probably why I own it, because it's, you know, it's a vampire movie that shows some of the skills that are in the game that I played.
That's true.
And still play.
Yeah, but it's, so. But there is no real meat and potatoes to the film. I hate that.
Yeah.
But like I said, Eddie Murphy, his whole career has made a couple of great movies. He doesn't even make, like, so-so movies. They're terrible.
But he doesn't have the over the top badness of a Nicolas Cage to where you can even make that a calling
card. He's not even a meme. Nicolas Cage is a meme at this point. If he's in a movie, he's just a meme. Yeah, Eddie Murphy, his potential of being so good is so high that you're just like, dude, why?
Yeah. Why did you accept this role?
Yeah.
Who talked you into this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that was the thing.
Were you getting Charlie a job?
Well, it's funny. Yeah, I remember Westgate Mall in Spartanburg. They had like a little like survey company that was in the mall, and they would occasionally get you and offer you like $5 or $10 to do a survey or watch movie previews and give your honest opinions.
Okay.
And so I remember them specifically pulling me aside and said, you know, if we give you $10, would you watch a couple of movie previews?
Sure.
And then write, you know, tell me your thoughts. Great. Okay. So I remember distinctly watching The Adventures of Pluto Nash, which is an Eddie Murphy movie.
Right.
About him being in outer space, doing wacky things. And, like, I think my entire opinion of it was, like, is Eddie Murphy broke? Like, why? There's no way Eddie Murphy read that script and went, winner.
Yeah.
And if he did... He must have been on coke or something. Or, like, because I don't understand how you can look at the script.
Is there a drug problem involved in his poor decisions?
Like, I understand how you can look at the script for Life, where it's like, hey, me and Martin Lawrence are going to be in an old school prison, you know, it's going to be hilarious. Think winner, and then read Pluto Nash and go, also a winner.
Yeah.
Do you just say winner to everything?
Right.
Do you roll a dice and go, yeah, dice says right. So
it was like, okay, my calendar's open. Let's do what lines up with the calendar. Is that your decision-making process?
So that was, it was just very confusing to me because the actors normally don't have those kinds of swings. Like, you don't see Leonardo DiCaprio make just two turds and then The Revenant.
Right.
And then two turds and then Wolf of Wall Street.
Right.
You know, it's always blown my mind about Eddie Murphy.
Yeah. I don't know the answer.
But in a way, it makes him unique.
Yeah, sure.
In a good and bad way? I mean, but you're right. I mean,
In a positively awful way.
His closest composite was Nicolas Cage, but you know Nicolas Cage is broke. Like, he wanted to buy a castle and a bunch of paintings and a bunch of dumb shit.
But he's a Coppola. How can Nicolas Cage be broke?
Because he buys dumb things. Like, he spends his money on dumb shit.
It's because he's trying to buy the Declaration of Independence.
No, you must steal the Declaration. You can't buy it. You have to steal the Declaration of Independence.
He's going to buy it and then steal it. You know, he's going to steal it from himself.
Yeah.
You know, he's going to buy it as a...
That's how he keeps himself amused and hides it in a room in his castle.
He's going to buy it as a shill company. And then, you know, hire that shill company as a security outfit.
Firm, yeah.
Yeah, and don't tell them that he's the boss. And then he has to try to break in. And then the big reveal at the end is, I am your boss, just let me have it.
Yeah, and then it's an episode of Undercover Boss, and it's on CBS, and Nicolas Cage gets more money.
Yeah, please don't shoot me in the head, I'm your boss.
Yeah, I don't know.
When it goes horribly, horribly wrong.
Yeah, yeah, because Nicolas Cage isn't going to be able to successfully do that.
No. He'd have to be able to, you know, do anything without drawing attention to himself.
Right.
Nicolas Cage is not a rogue.
No. Nicolas Cage, definite bard.
His stealth rating is bad.
He's a bard. He walks into a room and it's, hey!
Hey! I'm here!
I'm here! Nicolas Cage!
We found the bard. Not sure what his charisma rating is.
It varies wildly. Nicolas Cage and Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy's always charismatic. You know, but yeah, Nicolas Cage, he's either like a 5 or a 20. Like, I don't know what the...
It's like he has a variable charisma rating.
Right.
Every scene, roll for charisma.
All right, this scene of charisma is 13. Well done.
That would be an interesting character.
That would be.
Where, you know, you know, your character class has one stat that is variable, and every scene you start, you roll that stat.
What?
And
you
can make it like 3d6, so you don't bottom out to a 1.
Right.
You know? But yeah, between 3 and 18 on any given...
At any given time.
That could be interesting. And you don't know, you know, your character doesn't know what it is.
Right,
so,
right.
But so yeah, if you had somebody who could actually role play and actually play that out,
that would be a good challenge.
That could be fun.
Yeah,
it's like I'm playing the Nicolas Cage character. My charisma is
just varies wildly from scene to scene.
I'm playing the Hulk character. My strength varies wildly from scene to scene.
That could be fun.
Yes. I'm playing somebody. My stamina.
Well, your intelligence could vary. Like you
always think you're intelligent,
right? But and that would be the crux. You'd have to make horrible decisions and have
absolute confidence in your ability.
Right. Yeah. If you're rolling Nick Cage charisma, part of Nick Cage charisma is you always think you have 18 charisma, no matter what your actual charisma is.
If you roll a 3 strength for that scene and you go to pick up that donut and you barely can, you think that is a heavy ass donut.
Right. Who making lead donuts over here?
So that's our
that would be good role play.
That's our pitch for role playing game.
I'm a fan of that.
We want a role playing game with each class has one variable stat. And come up with, you know, 5 different classes, 7 or however many stats you have. That's how many classes you have, and wildly variable. You know, you don't know if you had a bad hair day or not. Your appearance could be 3 or it could be 18. Depending on
you have no actual grasp of what looks good. You just think you look good.
Yes.
Whether you actually look good or not.
You don't actually put any work into it, and you may live in a world with no mirrors, so you have no control.
Right. Today is a good face day.
Yesterday, apparently, I was beaten with a stick overnight.
I slept wrong, and it all mushed over to one side.
Yeah. And that's a great tangent to leave.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah. That was one of our better, like, ending tangents.
Yeah. And as always, you know, copyright 2018 Black Market Toast Podcast.
Yeah. Crazy Ideas LLC.
Creative Commons. Yeah. Use and use alike.
Yeah. Just give us credit.
Yeah, just attribution. Come on.
Yeah. We need it.
Tell the world where you got it from.
Yeah.
That's all we want.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's enough vaguely vampire in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
We're still not allowing Joe to make decisions because he doesn't want to.
Pretty much.
Does that enough in his life?
That's most of my life.
So he's making me do it. So we're gonna go with a German Netflix original series.
That's wunderbar.
It is. Have you watched Dark?
9.
Okay. I believe that means 9. So you've watched it 9 episodes, 9 of the 10 episodes. Okay. Yeah, dark. It is dark. Okay. But it's a psychological physics. It's fun.
I'm cool with that.
I swear. There's 10 episodes. They're each about an hour each. And, you know, I would say just watch three, but once you get started, it's like rings.
Cool.
So once you pop, you can't stop. Pringles. This yeah. episode was not brought to you by Pringles.
It was not.
Because nobody gives us money.
No.
And I am at Woodle on Twitter. I don't use it, but I am.
Yeah, I'm that Joe you know on Instagram. I do use that.
And we will talk at you next time.
Toast.